We're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 5, Chapter 3, Vishabhya's Appearance, Text Number 15. O Lord, you perform many wonderful activities. Our only aim was to acquire a son by performing this great sacrifice. Therefore, our intelligence is not very sharp. We are not experienced in ascertaining life's goal. By inviting you to this negligible sacrifice for some material motive, we have certainly committed a great offense at your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, please excuse our offense because of your causeless mercy and equal mind. Report. The priests were certainly unhappy to have called the Supreme Lord from Vaikuntha for such an insignificant reason. A pure devotee never wants to see the Lord unnecessarily. The Lord is engaged in various activities, and the pure devotee does not want to see him whimsically for his own sense gratification. The pure devotee simply depends on the Lord's mercy, and when the Lord is pleased, he can see him face to face. The Lord is unseen even by demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. By calling on the Supreme Lord, the priests of Nabi Maharaj proved themselves unintelligent. Nonetheless, the Lord came out of his causeless mercy. All of them, therefore, wanted to be excused by the Lord. Worship of the Supreme Lord for material gain is not approved by the materialists. Is not approved by authorities. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chatu vidha bhajante mam jana supiti narjuna artho jignasu artati vanicha varata shabha. Of those among the bards, Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me: the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Initiation into bhakti begins when one is in a distressed condition or in want of money, or one is inquisitive to understand the Absolute Truth. Nonetheless, people who approach the Supreme Lord in this way are not actually devotees. They are accepted as pious, supritina, due to their inquiring after the Absolute Truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not knowing the various activities and engagements of the Lord, such people unnecessarily disturb the Lord for material gain. However, the Lord is so kind that even though disturbed, he fulfills the desires of such beggars. The pure devotee, however, is anyabhilasita sunyam. He has no motive behind his worship. He is not conducted by the influence of maya in the form of karma or jnana. The pure devotee is always prepared to execute the order of the Lord without personal consideration. The Ritvija, the priests of the sacrifice, knew very well the distinction between karma and bhakti. Because they consider themselves under the influence of karma, fruit of activities, they beg the Lord's pardon. They knew that the Lord had been invited to come for some paltry reason. Paltry means insignificant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here, again, Srila Prabhupada is bringing us to the point of pure devotion, describing the four class of people who come to Krishna consciousness, as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. The Prabhupada is clearly saying that none of them are doing personal problems or just like Shantaj Prabhupada said, when he was struggling so hard to make the Juhu Temple in Bombay. And after it was finally successful, so many things came out that the man who was trying to cheat them, he suddenly died, and so many things. Then Prabhupada said, we shouldn't do this again, because this is straining Krishna. We're so much, needing Krishna's help, but he asked it, something like that. So the purport was that, Prabhupada exemplified in his last days. We were asking, please, Prabhupada, pray to Krishna, your pure devotee, he prayed to Krishna to let you stay here longer. He'll agree. The Prabhupada said, no, we cannot do that. We're not asking Krishna for anything. This is not our mood. This is not the mood of the devotee. We don't demand, please, Krishna, give me this, give me that, save my wife, save this, something. No. This is not pure devotion. Pure devotion is we go on with our service and we're happy in the service. The service has to come to the point. If it's actually done in pure devotion, then it will make us happy. So whether the Lord chooses to reveal himself to us, that's up to him. He may directly show himself, like he did to Prabhupada on some occasions. But that's considered as some exceptional, to have the direct darshan of the Lord. Of course, we say the Lord is there in his prasadam, the Lord is there in his holy name, the Lord is there in the devotee. When the devotees come together and discuss to Shantichar, Ramantichar, Krishna says, I'm there. But there's also this sense that that when Krishna personally comes, that's a different thing. I mean, when he's personally there, in his Shamshita form, then, just like he's come here to the assembly, then that's considered also, you can say, exceptional or a little different than the fact that he's there in his prasada and so on. He is there in Prasadam. He is there in his holy name. He is there in his murti form. We don't deny that. Rather, we emphasize it. I know when Prabhupada personally said like that to us, he said that Krishna is there. And he was pointing to his deity. Krishna is here. Many times he said like that. So, this is part of the philosophy of Chintabheda Vedatattva. Simultaneously one and different. Krishna is there in his holy name and all those things, but he's also in his own abode. And when he personally comes, reveals himself, then, of course, that's another occasion. That's a special occasion. So this was the special occasion. And when he came, of course, these priests, they're called Rikviks here, because they're acting on behalf of the king, they were naturally a little embarrassed. They probably weren't expecting the Lord would personally come. They were just expecting that the Lord would, through his energy, you know, reciprocate with them and he'd give a good son to the king. But when he personally came, then they felt a little, oh my gosh, we called you here, but we're only asking you that, you know, that you give the king a son. And this is not really the platform of pure devotion. So please forgive us for troubling you, making you come. And of course, because they're presented like that very humbly, the Lord is going to reciprocate. The Lord appreciates that. He doesn't want to be anybody's order supplier, but he may choose to come on his own sweet will. So when will the Lord choose to come? Well, we can have some idea. I mean, we can't speak for the Lord, but we know that there's certain qualities of the Lord, such as being bhakti-vatsal, and therefore there's qualities that we can try to develop that will attract the Lord. This is the idea. We want to attract the Lord. It's true. But the Lord, just like I was mentioning how Rupa Goswami was very shy. He wasn't so bold to declare that, yes, I'm a great poet and hear my poetry. But when that other devotee, he was insisting the Lord should hear that he had made the commentary on Bhagavatam better than Sukadeva Goswami. Then Lord Chaitanya didn't appreciate that. He called him a prostitute. You think you're better than our Swami. Swami also means husband. So if a wife thinks she's better than her husband, then she's like a prostitute. That's the reality. If a wife is really thinking like that, I'm better than my husband, that's why you have to be careful. She starts thinking like that, then she can easily neglect her husband and do whatever she wants to do. She won't accept his natural authority. Now, her husband has natural authority over the wife. This is nature's arrangement. If the wife doesn't care for that authority, then you know, she's like a prostitute. So, what Chaitanya, when you compare to the Bhavacharya, he's like a prostitute. Although he was a devotee. But because he was trying to present himself as superior to the Acharya. So, when the Lord came to Rupa Goswami, however, Rupa Goswami was so shy, he didn't even want to present his own poetry. Although the Lord was asking him, he still felt reticent or hesitant to speak in anything in front of the Lord out of his own, on his own. So, this is the quality that we should try to develop, to be sincerely humble. But that also, there's a razor's edge between real humility and false humility. In other words, if the spiritual master does want us to speak, and it's clear, then we may hesitate, we may resist, but when we see that that's his desire, then it's our duty to do that. It's like, I'm convinced that Srila Prabhupada wanted some of his disciples to initiate disciples on their own right, within the umbrella of his organization. So, if all the disciples say, no, we can't do that, then that's not wanted either, because that's the order of the spiritual master, is that we have to increase the number of disciples, increase Krishna's family. If the Prabhupada mentions in Nectar Devotion on this point, you find it that when such an opportunity is there and sincere people come forward, then it's the duty to accept. That way, one may appear to be proud. He said, I was mentioning that the essay by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. He writes from the about his Vyasa food ceremony, or he speaks on his Vyasa food ceremony, everybody's coming to worship him and to honor him. And he speaks there, and why it is that he's sitting like that, accepting that kind of glory. And how the main reason is because I've been ordered by Lord Chaitanya. This is Lord Chaitanya's order. Whoever you meet, you should talk to them about Krishna, become a guru. Lord Chaitanya has given that injunction. So the devotee, if he takes it in that way, as an order, which is entrusted to him by his spiritual master, by Krishna, then why can't he remain in the proper consciousness, without being carried away? Otherwise, the general, you can say, system is that if one is flattered, he'll become proud. This is the rule of the world. If you take an ordinary man and flatter him, then he'll start to believe that I'm not ordinary, that I'm special. So Prabhupada mentions that, or it's mentioned there, that the acharya, he thinks that he's more humble than an ordinary man. Ordinary man, you take from the street, he doesn't think he's so wonderful. Because he sees, I'm just, there's millions of people like me, millions of people like me in the world. Why am I special? I'm just an ordinary man. So he'll be a little humble about his position. Somebody who's very famous, he may not be so humble, but an ordinary man will be just a little bit about humble, generally. So it says that the acharya, although he may have thousands of disciples and people are coming, offering him so many things, but still, he's thinking of himself, or he's actually acting more humble than an ordinary man in his daily life, in his interactions with people. Just like I'm saying, when I deal with these business people, I have to be humble. Otherwise, I can't do business. And sometimes they cheat, because you're humble, I take it as a weakness. And then they cheat when I give up to them. Okay. Still, it's not our business to be proud. This is the devotee's mood. He doesn't think that he's special. And as soon as they start thinking they're special, I know some of the devotees, or sometimes they think, oh, we're disciples, we can do whatever we want. They started stealing and cheating, I think, like that. These things are so simple qualities. They're nonsense, rascal qualities, and they have noble qualities. So we can cheat from them and take from them. That'll be good. He's really doing it for Krishna. We're doing it for Krishna's service. But all of those people became fallen. Every one of them. Because they didn't respect the super souls in everyone's heart. The Garmi, like this, like, we're concerned about the next door neighbor and not disturbing them. They also have a right to exist. We can't impose our view, our ideas on them. It's like Prabhupada was standing in line, waiting for the airplane to go, and get to stand in line. And then one lady thought that she was ahead of Prabhupada. And then she said, no, I'm here. And Prabhupada immediately became very humble. Oh, excuse me, please, come. And he backed up. All the devotees were there. And he didn't push her. No, I'm the spiritual master. Don't you see all these people are my disciples? I should be in the front. No, he was very humble. Let this lady go forward. And then if for some reason, even for no, you know, no offense, somebody became antagonistic, then probably think, oh, it must have been my last life, I did something to this person, and now I'm getting the lash. That's the mood on a personal account of the devotee. However, for preaching purposes, for spreading the mission, then a devotee, because for Krishna, he can become like, he can chastise these fools. Why you don't take the Krishna consciousness? You're nonsense. That's for Krishna's behalf, for his own. Who has it said that? My spiritual master was so humble, except when he got on the Vyasa side. Then he'd be like fire. Because on the Vyasa side, we have to speak boldly the absolute truth. We're sitting on the Vyasa side, these people are coming to hear. And so we have to present very strongly what is the actual Siddhanta, what is the actual conclusion. Okay. Well, the problem is you're not, your moonlight face is not here full force.
I should go to your, I can be 15 minutes, 10 minutes.
Well, that's how you go. But close this door. So, to balance those two things, that requires a little maturity. And the motive has to be there. This is the point being made here. The motive is that we're actually trying to please Krishna, then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to balance that, how to be bold, to present Krishna consciousness in a strong way, yet to remain humble. And that too requires maturity. Neophyte devotees have a very difficult time with that. Therefore, generally, it's advised, don't take position in spiritual life. And there's a story like that of the from the story about Lord Rama, how he banished Sita because the people were criticizing, or he let her go with another man. So after that was done, so then he sent Lakshman to go out of the kingdom, find out if there were any other complaints. And he looked everywhere, he couldn't find any complaints. So after some time he came back, no, there's no complaint. He said, go and look again. So he went again. They came back and said, you know, there's one complaint from one dog. You heard the story?
Mm-hmm.
Dog, yes, some dog. What's his complaint? He's saying, the dog is saying that I was just standing on the side of the path and this Brahmin came by and he struck me with his cane. And Lakshman was surprised. Why did Brahmin do that? So he approached that Brahmin, he asked him, he said, this dog is saying that you do. So the Brahmin said, I didn't like the way he was looking. And I struck him. So Lakshman was very upset. What is that? He didn't do anything the way he was looking. So Lakshman, you know, he was going to give justice. So he asked the dog, what punishment should I give to this Brahmin? Because he's offended you for no reason. So the Brahmin said, yes, you make him the head of the society of Brahmins and devotees. And Lakshman said, but that's a very exalted position. He says, yeah, I know it's an exalted position. I had the position myself in my last life. He said, but I know his nature is that if you make him in charge of all these devotees and Brahmins, then he'll offend them, and therefore he'll have to become a dog like me. But that's the danger. We should be careful not to become, to lord it over the devotees, to take them as our servants, to think that we can. And that's also the danger of becoming guru. Because naturally, guru disciple relationship, there has to be some consideration for superior, inferior. But if the guru starts thinking that I'm, better than others, then he loses his position as a servant. His real position is a servant. So, at his service, he can correct the disciple. He can improve him. He can try to train him. But if as soon as he misses that service attitude, that he's doing this as a service to his spiritual master, and if he begins to take it for his own personal pleasure, or aggrandizement, then he'll quickly fall down. We saw it happen so many so-called gurus because of immaturity, that they couldn't properly deal with it. Therefore, we're not anxious to have many disciples. And just like Sudama Brahman, he had no money, he was so poor. And when he went to Krishna, his wife pressed him, please ask Krishna for some donation. You're a Brahmin. He's a very wealthy kshatriya. He can give you some donation. So Siddhartha Brahmin went to see him. And he forgot all about asking him. He was so enlivened by having the association of the Lord and remembering of some of their pastimes and children and so on. So on the way back, he said, oh, I didn't ask the Lord for anything. Then he thought to himself, just as well I didn't ask for anything, because I'm so fallen. Well, if the Lord had given me something, I might have become fallen and you can say, deviated from devotional service because of all of this opulence. But that's how we should think. We may not have anything, any followers or any wealth or anything, but that we should take, that's Krishna's mercy. Krishna knows well what to give us, what not to give us, so that we don't become bewildered by the illusory energy. We can think like that, and it's not artificial thinking. We should think like, yes, now I become a devotee, Krishna is personally guiding my life. So whatever way he's guiding it, that best for my benefit. I should be resigned to that. And be satisfied with whatever position I'm in, understanding this is the arrangement of the Lord. And I don't have to have a bigger position. This is not the mood of the devotee. He doesn't want a bigger position. He's happy just with a little service. Okay. Have a good day.
Can you say me, Maharaj, where you got this story from? Thank you. Sorry.
Okay. But sometimes it's hard because we do have ambition for Krishna, and that's sometimes interwoven with our own ambition. So we have to be careful not to become, you know, polluted by that. And when the opportunity is there, then we have to, you know, just research, examine, just like we were saying, examine our own position. What is really our motive? Do we want to glorify Krishna, or do we want to glorify ourselves? It's a razor's edge. If we really want to glorify Krishna, then we can be patient in whatever position. Prabhupada was, even as an older man, he was traveling second, third class on the train, having only one set of cloth to change, two sets ripped and not good. You know, if anybody came and took an interview with him, they'd say, hey, here's a failure. What did he do his whole life? He was 60 years old and he still hadn't done anything. Okay. So, Bhagavatam Ki.